This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Joy 94.9.
Freshly dug Joycast.
You heard from Daniel Whithouse there about what he called the arrogant and dismissive process by which the Beyond Blue guidelines for the treatment of depression have been drafted. The obvious place to go to see what the community's response is going to be officially is, of course, to the LGBT Health Alliance, which is a consortium or a grouping, if you like, of ACON, the VAC, and the other health-related gay bodies around the country. And the executive director of that organisation is with us now, Gabby Rosenstreich. Good morning, Gabby.
Good morning, Dick.
Now, we've just been canvassing the whole business about, you know, what Daniel called the arrogant and dismissive process that Beyond Blue have gone to and how many people have been omitted, not just gays and lesbians, but homeless youth and all sorts of other people from these draft clinical guidelines. What's the Alliance doing to formulate a community response to this for them?
We're following our usual process, which is basically to consult with all our membership. We've got a broad membership across the entire country. I think we're 76 at the moment. So it's organisations ranging from individuals who are active in research or advocacy through grassroots, peer support groups, trans groups, right through to larger organisations such as the Also Foundation or the Way Out Project or Transgender Victoria. So there are a whole range of organisations within our network.
Now it's going to be tough to pull all that together by the 12th of May, which is when the response is wanted.
I suspect that what our response will be is fairly brief and making the overriding points of our critique, but also pointing out that a very under-resourced LGBTI health sector can't do in 2 weeks, or 6 weeks, or 2 months, what they've had 2 years to do in terms of drafting guidelines. We can't do their work for them, nor should we.
I think that's a very important point because, again, something else we talked about a few moments ago with Daniel, we're in a kind of catch-22 here, aren't we? Because on the one hand, there isn't money to do research that meets Beyond Blue's standards, but if we don't have research that meets Beyond Blue's standards, they won't give us the money.
Yes, to some extent it is catch-22. Although, you know, I hasten to point out there is really good, solid evidence. We have a really good evidence base. What we lack...
Well, why won't Beyond Blue accept that?
Because a lot of the research, certainly that's been done in Australia, is opportunistic sampling, it's called, or various types of methods are used, but it's generally...
What's opportunistic sampling, for those of us who don't know?
Sorry. It's basically approaching people that you already have access to, who you can find. It's not random and representative. It's not going across the entire population of Australia in the same way the census does, or even a representative sample in the same way that a household survey does. It's taking pathways into community to find people, to reach as many people as possible. So to that extent, you know, it's certainly solid, robust research, but it doesn't cover the entire population in the same way that mental health survey, for example, can. So it's catch-22. The research we have is great, gives us solid, robust findings, shows that there's a serious problem, and it shows really clearly that that's linked to social exclusion and discrimination. What we lack are inclusion in the large government-funded and funded through other sectors, large surveys and clinical trials, etc., because they don't tend to collect data on sexual orientation, let alone on gender identity. And there are real challenges around gathering gender identity data, but it's actually not that difficult to gather sexual orientation data. So, you know, perhaps Beyond Blue could require all research that they fund to include variables around sexual orientation. That would be a really helpful mechanism.
So in other words, what's wrong here is that in fact Beyond Blue have
drawn up their criteria in a very restrictive way, both for what research they will accept into informing these clinical guidelines, and also into the way they conduct, or, well, they don't actually conduct research, they outsource it, don't they?
Exactly.
In the way they require research that's done on their behalf to be carried out. So the actual problem is not ours, it's in Beyond Blue.
Yeah, although it's not unique to Beyond Blue, to be fair. And Beyond Blue are, in fact, they have committed to doing some targeted funding for research that's specific around GLBTI community issues. I think, you know, the more overriding issue is that most funding bodies do not have any sort of guidance for people applying for research funding saying, we're really strongly committed to ensuring that our research is representative and inclusive, so we require you to collect data on sexual orientation, sex and gender identity, because we know we need to know that stuff.
Yeah.
That would be important, but it, you know, to be fair, it's not unique to Beyond Blue.
No, but they are the biggest charity, whatever you call them, dealing with depression. They are the peak body. They hoover up vast amounts of money.
Oh, absolutely.
Starve other bits of the sector of money in so doing. So it really behoves them, I think.
Absolutely. But, you know, look at research councils. You know, it's certainly a problem that Beyond Blue is part of. Absolutely. But it's not unique to them.
No, but I mean, they could do something about tackling the problem. They could take a lead on this issue, and they're not doing.
Absolutely. Yes, exactly. I totally agree with you.
So what's the next step? You're going to be consulting with everybody. You're going to be putting in this response. What do you expect Beyond Blue to do when they get the responses in? Because they do seem to have woken up to the fact that they've made a bit of a gaffe here.
Yes, and I mean, that's also, I guess, you know, many organisations are not working around our issues well, and for me the real test is how do they respond then to critique and challenges, and hopefully we don't have to keep repeating the same critique again and again. What we would like, obviously, is for them to take the critique of the sector into account and revise the guidelines. Ideally, I think they should pay somebody to go through and find with a fine-tooth comb and see, you know, where change is necessary.
Because it seems to me, the more I'm hearing about these guidelines, is that they sound like they're rather undercooked, like they're rather rushed, that they've, you know, they've not really thought this whole thing through in any systematic way. And I have been hearing from some sources within Beyond Blue that, in fact, these guidelines weren't due to come out till the end of the year, but suddenly they've been raced out in this kind of, you know, basically an unfinished form. Have you any idea why that may have happened?
No idea at all.
Because that's how it looks to me. Doesn't it look to you as though it's a bit of a, you know, unfinished job?
No, I can't comment on that at all. I think it certainly is unfinished in that there are glaring gaps.
And not just GLBTI.
Yeah. Yeah, I think part of our concern is both that there's failure for specific mention of sexuality, sex and gender identity as factors that will influence how effective intervention should happen. Mm-hmm. It's not even about proving that it's an issue that is a causal factor. It's actually about working effectively with people, young people, with depression, and taking it into account. But the other side of it is more fundamental, that it is a very medical model of depression that's evident in the guidelines. And so that's broader than just sexual orientation and gender identity, as you've said.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole range of social factors that influence both, you know, whether people actually have depression and certainly how they can respond to it.
So you're saying this is possibly too narrowly focused on purely clinical, purely medical issues without taking into account social context, because there could be situations, for example, where somebody's depressed, justifiably depressed, if I can put it that way, and that if you change their social circumstances, that would lift their depression and they wouldn't need medication.
Absolutely. That's not the case for everybody, of course.
No.
Certainly,
but
discrimination is a really key factor, and that's been proven. There's good evidence that impacts on whether people experience depression and anxiety or not. And certainly how the resources that are available to them to actually respond to it.
Hmm. So in fact, you could say the guidelines have been too narrowly focused. Because if this is going out to people like GPs and that, and all they're seeing is a medical response on a medical problem, then they're not going to look at that social angle, are they?
No, and we would argue they're then not going to be doing their job as well as they could do.
No, and also with the emphasis the government is placing now on preventative health, I mean, surely that particular dimension is very important when you're talking about preventing depression arising in the first place.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, these guidelines are about responding to existing depression and not with the focus of preventing it ever happening. But that preventative aspect, yes, of course it's relevant too.
Yeah, well, good luck with it. From what I'm hearing, I'm not sure we're going to get much of a response out of them. They're sticking to their gold standard. Perhaps the problem is that they ought to change their standards.
Quite. I would certainly argue that, and I'm hoping that they'll think through not only what their criteria are around research that they include in these sorts of documents, but also their processes around developing them, because the community sector has huge expertise and very low resources. So it's about building capacity within the LGBT sector to be able to assist organisations such as Beyond Blue in developing documents, in developing approaches to things, and in implementing them. And that needs a partnership approach, and it needs resourcing.
Yes. Well, unfortunately, we tend to get omitted from a lot of things, don't we? I mean, when LGBT is largely absent from the social inclusion agenda.
Quite.
for example. And as you pointed out, when you put out that poster that you put out recently, virtually every other minority group has a ministry and a whole range of structures for dealing with the government, and there's nothing.
Yes, exactly. The Alliance was founded out of the community sector in response to a need to have a framework for us all to be working together, and currently we get no government funding whatsoever. It's entirely funded through community organisations.
And they're always saying to us they want one body for them to talk to on our side. I think it's time we ask them for one body on their side.
Yeah, that would be good, but just simply their assistance in enabling a partnership approach by funding the Alliance or some sort of national structure would be really helpful. They do it for other communities.
Yeah, why not us? And the only answer has to be discrimination, I think.
Yeah, quite.
At the end of the day. Okay, thank you very much for your time this morning, Gabby, and the best
thank
of luck with it.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye. Yeah,
bye-bye. That was Gabby Rosenstrike there, the Executive Director of the LGBT Health Alliance, who are obviously struggling to do what they can. I mean, they really are basically just Gabby and an office and whatever money ACON and VAC can spare, along with the other groups. There's an election issue for us. We want to get involved. We want to get the government involved. We want to partner with the government on dealing with issues like this. They've got to put their hands in their pockets and give us some money.
Joy 94.9.
Freshly dug Joycast.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.